The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And a lot of people, probably a lot of your listeners and readers, focus on law enforcement, government, or hackers, when the reality of it is the largest purveyors of data theft in the world are the giant technology firms and hardware and telcos. They get more data from you, from your device, than any NSA. And that device allows all the other apps you have to send data. If you have Facebook or Twitter, they take about 32 pieces of data every day from your device.
I'm Carrie Cordero, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, August 15th, 2015. That was the voice of Mike Janke, the chairman and co-founder of Silent Circle. As regular Lawfare readers and listeners know, this site has hosted a good amount of dialogue in recent weeks and months on the so-called going dark issue. The discussion has been prompted in large part by FBI Director Comey, who has warned that the mass deployment of end-to-end encryption on commercially available devices and services is or will very soon keep the FBI from investigating and possibly preventing terrorist acts and other violent crimes. Academics, technologists, privacy activists, and in some cases industry leaders have pushed back against any notional proposal that the U.S. government should mandate access for law enforcement to encrypted services or devices. So we are particularly pleased today to be joined by Mike Janke, chairman and co-founder of Silent Circle. This is the Lawfare Podcast, number 136.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Carrie.
Great. So we're going to start out, for Lawfare listeners who might not be familiar with Silent Circle, I'm going to ask you just to start out by explaining what Silent Circle is as a company and how it got started.
Sure. So Silent Circle is a private communications firm headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, with offices in Madrid, Washington, D.C., Mexico City. We were founded in late 2011 by myself. I have a background as a former Navy SEAL and an entrepreneur, along with Phil Zimmerman, the creator of PGP encryption, and he's in the Internet Hall of Fame and the Cybersecurity Hall of Fame. Our other co-founder is John Callis, who is the creator of Apple's whole disk encryption and iOS security. We have been founded under the premise that every human being, a law-abiding citizen around the world, deserves to have privacy in a conversation, in a document they send, in a text, regardless of race, religion, where they grew up, background. And there just wasn't such a service, product, or right of privacy existing in the world. The ubiquitous rise of the smartphone, the tablets, the mobile economy, and the overwhelming surveillance of citizens by either governments, law enforcement, or hackers, combined with the massive threat of intellectual and industrial property theft, via electronic means. You can call that hacking. You can call it intellectual property theft by nation states. We started this utilizing a set of three apps that were both iOS and Android, encrypted phone call, encrypted conference call, encrypted mobile video chat, text with sending any file, and secure contacts. We had no idea that the Snowden revelations obviously would happen. And we started out basically our service on iOS, Android devices and tablets, but we quickly knew technology-wise that only gets you so far. It's great that you have, you know, secure calling on, let's say, an iOS device or a Samsung, but so many other apps, phone makers, telecoms have access to your device. We knew we had to build our own device, and we had the technological chops to do it. So we ended up partnering with Geeksphone, a Spanish, very young, very innovative phone maker, and then eventually buying them. And we launched our very first, the world's very first secure Android phone called BlackPhone in 2014. And it won one of the top 25 inventions of the year by Time Magazine. It won Phone of the Year by Mobile World Congress and MIT's top 10 technologies of the year.
So is it fair to say that that what is particularly different about Silent Circle versus some of the other Silicon Valley companies or other companies based in Washington, where Silent Circle created its product with privacy by design versus some of the other participants in the industry that are sort of playing catch up on this part?
Well, absolutely, and it comes down to the technology. Okay, so our technology is very unique. Obviously, Phil Zimmerman, Internet Hall of Fame, one of the most unique things he's noted for other than PGP is an encryption called ZRTP, which is ephemeral key encryption, which means there's no server in the middle. When you call me, Kerry, keys are exchanged in that call. After the call, they're deleted. They're ephemeral. So there's no core server as the weak point. No company in the middle. It is truly private citizen to private citizen, company to company, and then the keys are here and then they're gone. And they're regenerated new keys after each text, each call, and it's peripheral to the client. We knew the way the world worked, the way technology and infrastructure works, that if you hold the keys to be able to decrypt a call, a text, a file, you are the weak point. And that weak point can be accessed by nation states, hackers, governments, criminals, or just a rogue employee. So we built a next stage communication service where nobody could be evil. Nobody could have access to it other than you and the person calling. Now, interesting, we started off as mostly consumer, but it quickly morphed into 90% of our business is enterprise. We basically replaced BlackBerry in the enterprise. There's no server, no BES server needed, no infrastructure. The company itself doesn't run into liability issues by housing all of this private communication. There's no server that is a weak spot to be attacked, hacked, or subpoenaed. But it was the next generation of what I'll call secure encrypted communication. And we morphed into our BlackPhone 2, which is launching right now, into an enterprise platform, almost like a small Apple, where, as an example, a large business will buy our BlackPhones. Then they will buy subscriptions to our software to put on their existing iOS and Android devices. And they will also buy our calling plans. So it's more of a communication platform. And that's really been the difference. So let me give you an example. Let's say some cool kids out in the valley in a garage create another encrypted texting app that disappears. Well, those apps are built with a server housed somewhere that holds the key to that. The second part of it is that app is sitting on a commercial Samsung, HTC, or iOS device. And that device allows all the other apps you have to send data. If you have Facebook or Twitter, they take about 32 pieces of data every day from your device, including your geolocation, when you're awake, your contact list, on and on and on. So you're only really as secure as the device you have. And that's really been the innovation that we've done with the hardware to control every aspect of data that leaks from your device, not just secure communication, but you can go on and use Uber. But Uber only gets your location that one time if you want it. It doesn't get your contact list, your geolocation, your email, your keywords, your accelerometer, your usage, all the things that all the other phones in the world today leak. And a lot of people, probably a lot of your listeners and readers, focus on law enforcement, government, or hackers, when the reality of it is the largest purveyors of data theft in the world are the giant technology firms and hardware and telcos. They get more data from you, from your device, than any NSA.
So I want to come back. It's really interesting because I want to come back to something that you mentioned about your market. A lot of the discussion on this going dark issue in sort of the public discussion between industry and government and the Justice Department who have been talking about this, the push against the Director Comey's position and the Justice Department's positions have been that the companies are moving towards mass end-to-end encryption because there is this great consumer demand for it. And so it's my sense of the public debate has been that the industry push towards encryption is much more about accommodating enterprise customers, and in particular foreign enterprise customers, than it is about everyday Americans concerned about their privacy. From your perspective, is there any evidence that everyday citizens are really demanding this service, or is your market experience with Silent Circle more representative of what's going on in terms of the interest from the enterprise sector?
That's a fantastic question. And what I would tell you is we are a Swiss firm. We've never been a U.S. firm. Even though I'm an American citizen, you know, former Navy SEAL, majority of our employees are all over the world, whether that's, you know, 30, 40 engineers in Madrid, cryptographers in Germany. Over 80% of our business is outside North America. So if you go to Germany, privacy is the number two item that is discussed at the government, private policy, community level. So in Germany, probably 60% of the citizens, in one way, shape, or form, are utilizing privacy-oriented technology products, whether that's ad blocking, whether that's Silent Circle, whether that's a VPN or Tor, because to them, it is really, really a high list item. And lots of Europe, believe it or not, in South America, it's a very big deal, both as private citizens and businesses. Overwhelmingly in the world, yes, there's a huge move on the enterprise stage to utilize secure communication, knowing that, so as an example, if you're an automaker in France, you're not just worried about the communication you have with India, China, the U.S., you know, other parts of Europe. That's your intellectual property that is every day, every second being sent via email, conference calls, phone calls, video chats, drawings that you're sending to work teams in other countries. They care about hackers, and they also care about nation state. So criminal IP theft and nation state. China, India, at least 15 to 30 other countries are aggressively targeting industries to steal data to give them a leg up or to improve their economies. And obviously you see that happening in the United States with the massive amount of theft of secrets from Russia and China, both targeting government and enterprise. So the enterprises themselves, what we call enterprise privacy, are concerned about all those things. Citizens are concerned about nation states, law enforcement, and hackers. And the fact that, look, you, Kerry, may not think that a government or law enforcement or a hacker would really want any of your communications. Now, a hacker, it depends. If they're a criminal wanting your bank information or, recording phone calls to blackmail you, that's one thing. But it's not about I don't have anything to hide. It's about you were born with the right. And our Constitution in the United States and Switzerland and other countries was set up to allow you a reasonable right of privacy, not we're going to surveil everything and then we'll figure out what is bad, what is good. So you have this global melting pot of areas and pockets of the world that is more civilian-centric and enterprise-heavy. In the U.S., it's very, very enterprise-heavy.
So let's focus for a minute on sort of the technical piece, because as I understand you're describing the Silent Circle platform, just to confirm, am I correct to understand that Silent Circle, you do not retain the ability to decrypt communications that occur on your product, correct?
That is correct. Technologically, Okay. We don't hold anything.
You don't hold anything. Okay. So, and that's by design, because that's the service and the products that you're offering. Now, part of the encryption debate, as you know, has been law enforcement questioning industry as to whether or not there is some way, as a technical matter, to be able to retain an ability to decrypt communications or unlock devices in order to respond to a lawful court order. And there are some commercial services available, perhaps not the ones offered by your company, but there are other services available where the companies do retain some ability, perhaps for their business purposes, to be able to decrypt communications. Does that then make them less secure? Are those services less secure because they retain some ability to decrypt?
Absolutely, 100%. There hasn't been a system yet that's connected to the internet that retains data that has not been hackable. There isn't a product that can give you even 75% assurance of protecting hacking. So, as an example, let's talk about Apple and all the data they retain, right? So data, Twitter, Facebook, Google, whoever, puts out a list every quarter, every 6 months, every year of all the law enforcement requests. And they're in the tens of thousands. Why? Because they have that data. It doesn't matter if it traveled from Kerry to Apple securely. It is able to be decrypted and handed over on servers. Now, if a government can get to it, criminals, hackers can get to it. Anytime you have a key, anybody else can get into it. It's been proven, it's been shown, and it happens every day. So, it doesn't mean that Apple, Google, and everybody else is evil. Quite the opposite. They're not in the business of just retaining the data in case it's needed. They're in the business of retaining the data to use it and monetize it. The more data they have on you, the better their products, the more money they make selling to ad and advertising and marketing companies, and the greater volume they have of data about how to market, whether it's in an Apple store or on Google Play or Twitter selling ads. So their focus is economics as to why data is king. And there's an old saying in Silicon Valley, he or she with the most data wins. Yahoo's been fond of saying that. The more data we get about our customers, the more targeted products we can offer the advertising world. So it's a very different reason. They're quite annoyed that law enforcement subpoenas them. Tim Cook, Google, Facebook, they're annoyed. And even Microsoft, they try to say, no, we don't want to turn this over. Because that's not really why they retain the data. They need, want, and use that data for economics. They make billions off of that. 94% of Google's revenue is off of advertising. And in order to sell those ads, they need to have the data of the consumers to target it. So they are privacy-focused in some ways. You talk to those people, the Android people at Google, they're privacy-oriented people when it comes to, governments are always asking for everything. But, you know, their motivation is different.
So let's go back a little bit. It was interesting the way that you started out in terms of sort of your company's philosophy by saying that every law-abiding citizen deserves privacy and has a right of privacy. So that seems to suggest to me that as an American citizen, as a global citizen, that you're obvious, and a former Navy SEAL, you're obviously well aware that there are still law enforcement equities in being able to serve and effectuate lawful court orders. Is that fair?
I would rephrase it.
Okay.
I would say several things. This, we're going dark, we're going dark, is a bunch of baloney. You can almost mark on your calendar every June, every May, the FBI, GCHQ, several others use their director to come out and say, oh, it's so terrible that things are encrypted. When in fact, we know that's not true. Even just from the Snowden files. Even on our black phone, they can track your geolocation. We don't try to stop you from, if you want to use a phone, turning it on means you ping cell towers so they can know where you're at. Number two, we don't stop traffic analysis. They can't listen in to Mike and Terry's conversation, but they know that your IP address on your phone spent 24 minutes connecting to Mike. We don't know what they said, but we know who talked to. That's traffic analysis. Number three, almost 100% of citizens that utilize a phone or some sort of encrypted, secure thing on their device have thousands of other apps. They have 1,000 other ways to get into a device, not a black phone, but other devices, and get data. And so they like to rail against the secure, you know, email or communication stuff. But the fact of the matter is they have a giant bag of tools to be able to locate you, know where you're at, who you're talking to, and get into your Apple or other Android device and monitor it. So it's a hollow cry.
Just to explore that a little bit more. So on the public policy side and in the public discussion, it has been, Director Comey obviously has taken a very vocal role in that, and in part because FBI has a primary mission of preventing against future terrorist attacks, a lot of the examples that he's used have been concerning ISIL and the potential for FBI or the national security establishment not to be able to access devices or communications that pertain to ISIL terrorist activities. But there are actually strong law enforcement concerns, and so we're starting to see more local prosecutors sort of get engaged on this issue about gaining access to someone's phone or emails or text, again, pursuant to a lawful court order. And some of the most egregious examples we could think of would be you know, a child exploitation or pedophile who's storing pictures and other evidences of their crime on their devices. In that circumstance, so setting aside what the capabilities of the national security community might be, in a pure law enforcement context, why wouldn't a company want to be able to comply with a court order in those situations?
Very great question. And it also comes down to the technology. Okay, so in the case of, let's say, child molesters and terrorists, okay, first thing I would say is that anything in life, the 1% scumbags will use for bad. Forget just technology. Every day in the world, mom and dads buy baseball bats and cricket bats, hammers to fix, you know, a treehouse for good. But every day in the world, 1% of the scumbags use that baseball bat, cricket bat, or hammer to bust cars, break kneecaps, and commit crimes. But we don't go out and sanction that every citizen has to have a passport, a 3-day safety check, and every baseball bat should be covered in foam, right? That's kind of harkens back to in the 1920s, two very unique innovators called Bonnie and Clyde figured out that they could rob a bank close to a state line, go very fast across the state line, and in those days, police weren't allowed to chase somebody in a state line, and radios didn't work that far. So there was actually a bill in front of Congress to limit the size of gas tanks in cars so they could only go 10 miles and move banks 20 miles from any state border. That would have literally affected every citizen in the world, in the United States, simply for two bad people. And that's kind of what happens in law enforcement. Let me give you an example. If the police suspect a terrorist or a child molester, they can go to a judge with reasonable cause and get their devices. They can serve a subpoena that says, we're taking your devices. They can go to the telephone companies and get a wiretap. They can get a subpoena to their email provider and get their email, to their cloud storage, to their Apple or Samsung, to their backups, right? That's what they have in their bag to do.
But I think the argument from the law enforcement perspective, though, is now that those things that they used to be able to do, if the device is encrypted and it's locked and they can't go to the company's in a position where it can't respond. So you can have a court order, but all it is a piece of paper because it can't be effectuated, right?
Well, so no, that's not necessarily the case. So they can go get a court order to wiretap a bad guy's phone in less than an hour. They can get a court order and a subpoena to track the phone in 10 minutes from Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, or MCI. What you're talking about is different. When they want to arrest or do a search and seizure order on somebody's computer or phone, you're talking about a password, right? They can't beat somebody with rubber hoses to give it up. Two avenues on that. Today, the FBI and Intel and law enforcement is unbelievable at cracking passwords. They'll just run it through a machine and crack basic passwords. The ones that are very, very difficult are the ones that they have to get a court order, a subpoena, and put somebody in contempt of court if they can't get into it. So far today, we don't know but a few cases around the world where law enforcement hasn't been able to get into somebody's computer by bypassing a password. What you're talking about is very different. You're saying that somebody has a device, let's say a black phone, and they can't get into it, or they can't track them. That's not true. They can track the phone. They know where they're at. They can do traffic analysis, know who they're talking to. And then if they have probable cause, they can go to that person's house, business, wherever they are, serve a subpoena for the devices, get those devices, and they can crack them. That's just the basic nature of it. So what you're hearing them say is they want the ability to not have to go through a court order to wiretap Kerry. Prior to Snowden, it was a rubber stamp. We want to surveil these 20 people and wiretap them. Okay, done. Now courts are pushing back. You have to go through another channel, get in front of a judge, make your case as to why I should wiretap her. That gets mixed into this bag of, oh, we're going dark. We're going dark, right? So you have to really pinpoint what it is that is they're saying is the obstruction.
So from your perspective, you think that when the FBI says that it's in a position where it can't, it is not capable in all circumstances of cracking the password or otherwise using what folks sometimes refer to as brute force to get into a device, you just don't buy that they don't have that capability?
We know they do. There was an article last week about a criminal that wouldn't turn over his password on his iPhone 6. Okay, they cracked it that day. The FBI cracked his password on his phone that day. So my point in saying all this, they were able to take down Silk Road, probably one of the most sophisticated dark web Tor-infused systems, and literally just take it down. Right? So you have to, what they're saying doesn't jive with what they're doing. Now, I'm all for law enforcement. Look, I have a 14-year-old daughter. If something happened to her, I want them to be able to get on it. I know that they have the capability right now to turn on, go to Verizon, and in 10 minutes, find out where she is, where that phone is. They have the ability to keep it triangulated down to 3 meters at any time.
Is it not correct that if they had a court order to get access to whatever the text messages might be on that phone, that if as consumer devices, again, not talking about services offered for enterprise, but from sort of the deployment of encryption on text messages, let's say, for consumers, that law enforcement, and again, this might not be the FBI, this might be local law enforcement that has less resources and technical ability, that they might not be able to obtain the content of those text messages. Do you think that's a fair understanding of what is coming down the pike with sort of the mass deployment of encryption, or no?
No. Are you familiar with Wireshark, built by Harris Corporation, and some of those?
Go ahead, and for our listeners, you can tell us what it is.
So there is a category of packet sniffers, phone hacking equipment that is built by several different defense contractors and private corporations, even in Europe. One of them is called Wireshark. Wireshark is deployed throughout most major cities, even small PDs, departments, FBI, all over our country, and tons and tons of other countries. With Wireshark, they are able to first get into your phone and monitor it. So it doesn't matter if I'm sending Kerry an encrypted text. They have all my keyboard strokes. They know what I'm writing. They don't need to grab it out of the air and get an encrypted gobbledygook. They have access to my microphone, my camera, every part of it. Regardless if I'm texting something, some bank heist information in an encrypted channel, they own my keyboard, they own my camera, my microphone. And if you saw in Texas, Illinois, and I believe recently Indiana, federal judges have been subpoenaing these PD departments saying, wait a minute, for the last 7 years, you've been deploying this capability, and you haven't come to us and said whether there's a legal need or not, because it's under 9/11, the Patriot Act stuff. And that's already starting to boil. So my point is, this is what we know of. And one of the companies in France that is providing mobile device and computer hacking equipment that can be deployed remotely, was hacked by hackers, and all of the files about the product put out on the web for people to read. They listed U.S. law enforcement that were buying it, small PDs in Colorado, Spain, France, 70, 80 countries, and they're just buying it and using it because it falls within that line. So I guess from my perspective, to say we're going dark is really, to the people who read and know the stuff and a lot of the reporters out there, an absolute farce. Now, I'm not saying that we need to turn the clock back and hamstring law enforcement, but there has to be a discussion. Oftentimes, the FBI sent memos to these local PDs. If you're trying a case and it appears that the judge and jury are angling towards what did you use to get this information, do not disclose Wireshark. That's an internal FBI memo that was turned over to a court. They didn't want it brought out in a public court that so much of this deployment of these technologies are out there. In Washington, D.C., there are so many nation-state black boxes that are spying on our country, each other, that they find them at Lockheed Martin's, you know, parking lot, put on a light pole that is monitoring and sucking up data from everybody's cell phones. They're down on apartment buildings. They can fit on the back of a bike today. You can go on the web right now and set one up, an IMEI catcher, and have your bike, park it on the street, and you can pick up in a square block, hacking just about everybody's device. So we know it exists. It's crazy. I also think that law enforcement shouldn't be too burnt. They shouldn't have to wait 24 hours for a judge to say, oh, okay, this kidnapped kid, you guys can tap, you know, Verizon, find out where they are, and get, you know, the text messages. That's not reasonable either. But there has to be a mechanism, not a blank check. And we can't get bureaucracy too laden on law enforcement that they can't respond fast enough to save lives. So there's a happy middle ground. We provide secure communications.
And that brings us a little bit to sort of one last theme that I want to ask you about, which is there some aspect of corporate responsibility that should be part of this going dark or encryption debate? And let me explain what I mean by that a little bit. Companies, both U.S. companies and global companies, do all sorts of things in terms of corporate responsibility and social action. A lot of times they do things in this area with respect to protecting the environment. Sometimes it has to do with philanthropic activities pertaining to education or poverty elimination or climate and energy, all these sorts of different social issues that companies engage on as a part of being sort of global citizens and doing the right thing. Do you see any role for a discussion of corporate responsibility in terms of being able to comply with, again, probable cause-based court orders? Should that be part of the discussion when it comes to whether or not companies should have some mechanism for being able to comply with court orders?
Sure. I think that's fair, and that's happening today. Let me give you an example. So let's say Belgium, you know, authorities call up our office in Geneva and say, there's been a kid kidnapped, and the kidnappers are using silent phone. Well, our policy is we're not a judge and a jury. You can't put a company in place. Well, our technology doesn't allow, you know, us to have the data to listen to the calls. We don't hold anything. But as a responsible company, we can say, okay, we'll turn off that service and refund their money, right? That's completely up to you. I don't need to see some, you know, inspector in our office showing me proof. I just need to see that it's a valid law enforcement. They say what the issue is, and we call it life and limb, right? If somebody's in harm's way And you just, you know, we can't hack in and listen to it, but you want, that's causing you not to do your job. Fine. We're not a judge and jury. We will turn off that user's, just cut their subscription right off and refund their credit card and send them a note. Sorry. You know, we've been contacted by law enforcement and here's your money back. That's responsible. That doesn't mean we handed over the keys to the kingdom. Why? Well, it's this overwhelming amount of abuse of the system, okay? 5-7 years ago, one of the oldest and longest used encryption email services, Hushmail, up in Canada, they use Phil Zimmerman's PGP encryption. They hold the keys on their service to decrypt it. Well, they got subpoena after subpoena from U.S., got pressure from the Canadian government, really, really bad guys, we need to have access to all this. Turns out they were forced to turn over access to all their servers. Turns out it was a steroid incident, that they were looking at a steroid ring. But they got access to hundreds of thousands of everybody's emails on that server. Why do you see Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, other companies pushing back? It's because that law enforcement has been known to abuse it. How about LavaBit during the Snowden? Turns out LavaBit in Texas, Ladar Levinson, a computer engineer, wanted to just provide encrypted email to his users. Turns out Snowden was using it. So they came down and said, we want access to everything. We want all 400,000 users' emails, all of it. He said, no, you've got a subpoena for one person. I'll turn them over. They seized it, took it, and he lost in court. So all 400,000 that were using that service is now data in the hands of law enforcement, whether you were law-abiding citizen or not. So that's what I mean. There has to be a middle ground here. Right? It's not, here's this, get out of the way, and jackbooted thugs come in and take all your servers. We built our technology so that wasn't putting us in that position. We do have responsible ways of saying, okay, fair enough. You guys are in our office. There's a bad guy who kidnapped a kid or who's going to kill somebody, and they're using Silent Circle products. Great. We'll shut off their subscription. We're not a judge and a jury. And that's the difference. When you say corporate responsibility, do you really want Google debating the severity of a police case to determine whether they're going to turn it over or not? That's why a subpoena that says, turn over this person's data. But what the companies are saying is, okay, have it very targeted. Tell us what it is. We'll turn it over to you. But not 400,000 other people and just give you all our servers. Right, that's not what the subpoena is supposed to be for. So there's a balancing act there.
Right, right. So so it'll be interesting to see, as you know, and as our listeners know, in the current discussion, there is no proposed legislation. So there's been sort of notions of whether or not there would be proposed legislation to mandate the companies have some way of complying with court orders, but there's nothing on the table yet. And maybe if those if some of those proposals are developed, there might be more opportunity to find if there is some middle ground in this debate. Mike, thank you for joining us for the Lawfare podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And appreciate you having me on.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Our music is performed by Sophia Yan. And as always, please spread the word and promote the Lawfare podcast via your social networks on Twitter, Facebook, email, and in any way you can. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.